Okay, let's begin. Well, actually, before we begin, I've been doing a series of posts on my blog about how the internet is changing our experience of knowledge. The way that you relate to knowledge and the way your children are going to relate to knowledge is going to be very different than the way the grandparents related to knowledge. And that, in turn, is changing how we're going to experience religion, how we're going to build religious structures and systems, and I think it's a good series of posts, and I think you ought to read it. In fact, I think you ought to subscribe to my blog, which right up here, you can put your email address in, a little thing will show up in your box and say, hey, he just put something new up there. Tuesday, I'm going to conclude this series of posts, and when I do, I'm going to say something like this. If church leaders are going to work in the new reality that is upon us, then it's going to profoundly change their job descriptions. It doesn't work for a church leader any longer to sit atop a religious hierarchy and then possess specialized knowledge, possess specialized information, and to know stuff that nobody else knows and then distribute it. Because now with the internet, everybody knows everything, and so that's just is no longer a valid way of thinking about how we lead. Which is a bummer for the poor religious leader, because his job just got a whole lot harder than it used to be. Because, to be honest, it's relatively easy to become an expert in the field. All you have to do is go to school, and you have to read the right books and learn the right stuff, and then you have to stand up and tell people what they need to know. And as far as job descriptions go, that actually is pretty easy. But it gets a whole lot harder now in the new world, because with everything accessible to everybody, knowledge distribution is no longer what people need. It was a good job while you had it, but that job's gone. Now what people need is context and a framework to be able to handle the overflow, the abundance of knowledge and information that everybody can get everywhere. That's the new job, framework making and context setting. In our tradition, we have a term for that. It's an old term because we've been doing it for a long time. And we call it spiritual formation. This is the process of being able to make a structure into which life experiences can fit and make meaning. So, this is a much more pressing demand, a much more pressing need than the days of delivering what you need to know to be right with God. What people need today in these frameworks of integration will allow them to process the multiplicity of information as well as giving it a place for life to find its meaning, so you should read the blog. But I tell you all that for a reason. I tell you that because I think that's the part of my job I'm the best at. I think I'm pretty good at meaning making, and I'm pretty good at context setting and matrix creating and narrative framing. That spiritual formation thing, that started attracting my attention very early on in my life, and so I think I'm pretty good at it. And sometimes people tell me I'm pretty good at it. And when I do it, very rarely do I tell people what to do. I think I've done that once in the last year. I told someone, this is what you need to do. Don't come back until you've done this thing. One time I did that. Most of the time, what I do is tell people about some history and give people some idea about how the ancient tradition has grappled with this same thing that you're grappling with, and here's how some people came out on it, and here's how some others came out on it. How does that inform what you're doing? Here's how our tradition has approached this, and here's how our tradition has approached that. And usually it's helpful, and I really like it, and it's a whole lot more fun than delivering Bible knowledge, and I do that about 15 to 17 times a week, and that's kind of what my week looks like during the course of a week. And if you're doing it with me, we're usually sitting at coffee someplace, because to avoid things going south, I usually don't meet with ladies alone, and sometimes the church is empty, and so I tend to meet people at a coffee place. And so when folks have an afflictive emotion, or when there's a time of confusion going on in life, these are fruitful times for soul formation. So what happens is that you all email Judy. Where do you email her at? you're so good, you're so good. Doug.appointment@gmail.com, and then she finds a time. Now, here's how my life shapes up. You can see how it kind of goes by looking at that. On Mondays, I hang out with Denise all day, or I read a book, or we catch up on TV that we've recorded during the course of the week. And then Tuesdays through Sunday, the orange times, I'm with people. And then the tan times, I'm either working on church business or I'm doing some writing. And when I'm writing, there's something that I'm doing, and that is that I'm sitting on my butt. And when I'm doing church business, I'm sitting at a computer, which means that I am sitting on my butt. And when I'm sitting at coffee and I'm talking with the folks in our community, well, something's happening, and that is that I'm sitting on my butt. And if you look at that week, that's a whole lot of butt sitting. And if you've been watching the news lately, this great, profound medical study was just done that says, basically, the more butt sitting, the more early dying. And I thought, well, now that's not good. I don't want to die early. And since that's what my weeks look like, I've been to organizing my life and rearranging it so that I do a little less butt sitting, and that is now I'm walking to work. And as I'm walking to work, it's about 5 miles to get to a place where I meet with some people and about 5 miles to get back. And so that's what I'm doing, which means I have less flexibility in my life than I used to have. So here's what's going to happen. You will email Judy and you will say, I would like to meet with Doug. And she will say, well, here's some times and here's the place. And you will write back thinking things are the way that they've always been. And you will say, no, I think there would be better than here. And Judy will write back and say, nope, it's going to be here or nowhere. And then... And then you're going to be offended, and that's a big, heavy load to put on Judy. I didn't want to have that on Judy, so I'm here saying, nope, it's going to be here or nowhere. So what I'm saying is that it's worth it, but now you're going to have to work a little harder to get there. 7 out of 10 times, it's really good when you come and meet with me. 4 of those 7, I mean, it's really good. 3 out of 10 times, it's not going to hurt you. Yeah, it might not be that great, but it isn't going to hurt you. 1 out of 100 times, it's bad. Those are the times I learn the most. It's really bad. But all that to say, it's going to be worth the hassle that Judy is about to impose on you, so get over it. That's what I'm saying. I figure I'm going to lose some time walking each week, but I'll make it up and live in a few more years. That'll probably be good. All right, that being said, let's begin. Here's what we said last week. If you count Abraham as your religious father, that is, if you are Jewish, or if you are Christian, or if you are Muslim, then the centerpiece of your religion, the starting point of your religion, the often through the centuries repeated theme of your religion is this: God's love is for all. All people, all nations, all people. So here's the journey. Connect to God yourself. Find the divine life within yourself. Deconstruct the ego version of self that we've been talking about. Discern the divine spirit within you, the Holy Spirit within you. Live from that interior reality. Awaken to that interior reality. Thus awakened, tap deeply into this deepest part of who you are. And when you do, when you draw from this divine center, the destiny that was given Abraham at the beginning, you will discover, is the same destiny that is given to you. And that is, through you, all the nations of the earth are to be blessed. Through you, all the peoples of the earth are to be blessed. So somebody put on one of the questions that we're going to do on the 23rd, tell me about this whole chosen thing. Because in many ways, this is the text that's referenced when we talk about being the chosen people. Being chosen is not somehow being set apart as the select few who get to receive God's blessing. That isn't what chosen means. What chosen means is being chosen for the job of bringing divine goodness and divine blessing to all of the earth, all of the nations, all of the peoples of the earth. Now, it is true, as we said last week, that religion often loses its way. And when it does, and when it gets distracted from this true north that was given to us as our compass bearing from the beginning, all kinds of silliness starts to masquerade as religion. That does happen. It's true. But when we capture the essence of what it means to be of our religious tradition, what we capture is that we are part of an interconnected whole, and our role in that is to serve the well-being of all, to make things on earth as they are in heaven. So that's where we left off last week. And if you grew up in organized religion, as I do, saying that this is our starting point and considering some of the implications that come when we make this our starting point can sometimes be a little bit disorienting. Because the question does come to us, what about all the stuff we focused on when we were growing up that wasn't that? What about all the not hanging out with the unbelievers lest their corrupt ways rub off on us? What about all that stuff? And what about the importance of getting people to heaven? What about the resisting of the works of all the terrible people? And you can fit in whoever the enemy was of your group, but whether it was the Republicans or whether it was the Democrats or whether it was the abortionists or the humanists, depending on what group you grew up in, there was a boogeyman out there that we were resisting and spent a lot of our energy fighting against. What about all that stuff that we focused on for all of those years, the not drinking and the not dancing, for some of us, not card playing? I didn't really get that. I didn't understand why you couldn't play Uno. I didn't understand. Not groping in the back seat, all that kind of stuff that we were taught. Yeah, don't do that. Well, to make sure that you understand the implications of what I'm saying last week, I want to put it as bluntly as I can. All that stuff that we spent all that energy on, all those fights that we marshaled all that energy to fight, all those words spent telling all those people how wrong they were about this or about that, all those votes that we marshaled to make sure that the right people got into office or stayed out of office, all of it was silliness masquerading as religion. So I'm trying to offend you. I'm trying to get to the place where you're saying, wait a minute, Doug, because that is harsh, and I don't think there's any way to say it except harshly. One great big exercise in missing the point that has kind of been the focus of the Christian church for the last 30 years. And last week I suggested we need to step back from our point missing. Now again, this is one of those times you might want to argue with me, and the 23rd, show up, that'll be the time. What I'm saying is that most of what the Christian church focused on for these last several decades has been a great big exercise in missing the point. All the money that we gave to all those TV empires, all the energy that we spent combating all those social ills, all those rock and roll albums that we burned when we were teenagers, and all of the work that we spent keeping ourselves pure and holy and spent making sure that we finished reading the Bible by the end of the year, all of those things missed the point. For many of us. Now, I did a lot of that stuff, so consequently, I hate saying that because I hate the idea that I spent so much of my vitality and so much of my energy and so much of my life on stuff that so badly missed the point, but somehow I did. And somehow I didn't know any better. Somehow I missed the Abraham memo. As a young religious man, I picked up the message that God was interested in the part more than the whole. Now, to be fair, I was a child of the West. I was not weaned on everything is connected as a principle or a perspective. In my mind, God's starting point was where every Westerner's mind's starting point is, and that is that God began with the individual. That's what good Westerners always think. So in my guts, I just assumed that our religion would also focus on the individual. So consequently, getting individual souls saved, or getting individual souls healed, or getting individual souls moving in the right direction was the point. And so I figured that if we got enough of those individual souls, we would hit some kind of a critical mass and things would get better. When it came to healing, that's what I thought God's starting point was, the individual life, the individual soul. And if enough souls got healthy, well, we couldn't get it all, but the world would be a better place. And it never occurred to me that the divine mission from the beginning was so simple, goodness for all, the well-being of all. The core Western narrative made me gullible. It made me gullible to a religious idea that the whole earth was going to burn and a few select individuals were going to be okay. And that was okay in my mind because the idea of the individual was so pronounced. And so I could hear that narrative that has nothing to do with this text. It has nothing to do with Jesus. But I could hear that narrative and it could make sense to me because I had been so steeped in the Western idea that the starting place of everything is the individual. So, it never occurred to me that the divine mission was to heal the whole earth. It never occurred to me that individuals were recruited as people to get healthy so that they could serve the larger mission of making the whole earth healthy. You'll often hear me say, hurt people hurt people. But it is also true that healed people heal people. If the divine purpose is to heal the whole, then it makes sense that healing the individual to work toward the mission would be pretty important. Individuals get healed. That is part of our tradition. Individuals find themselves awakening from blindness into sight, awakening from weakness into strength, awakening from brokenness into wholeness. We call that salvation. We find that that is part of our tradition. But we get healed so that we don't spread any more sickness. We get healed so that we can be participants in healing the sickness that is already out there. Mine was a very individually focused religion. The religion of Abraham is a very globally focused religion. Mine was a very individually focused religion, but the religion of Jesus is a very globally focused religion. Western society emphasizes the individual. Jesus and Abraham and pre-Roman Christianity emphasize the whole. The story of the Bible is a global story. It's a healing of the nations story. And as you go through the Bible, you're going to find many, many times when our family lost their way. Sure you will. And you'll find many, many times when they thought it was just about me and mine, us and ours. But again, when we lose our way, all kinds of silliness masquerades as religion. So those are our options. First, God cares for the whole, and individuals are finding themselves as participants in the mission of the whole. And we find our get healed and then heal role within the context of the mission of bringing goodness to the whole. It's either that or option two is that God cares only about the individual. God cares only about the soul, and you heal enough souls and things are going to get better. You save enough souls and things are going to get better. Option one, option two. I'm going to suggest that there's a third option. Option three, God only cares about the whole. And that is that the individual is immaterial, not part of the equation. If you're old enough to know the movie Casablanca, you remember the last scene where Humphrey Bogart says, the problems of three little people doesn't amount to a hill of beans in this crazy world. Basically, it's a religion of saying your personal private world is your personal private world. And don't get all religious about it. Just make sure you do what's right for the earth. Be a responsible citizen for the whole. Make sure that you vote right and get involved in social justice and spread the one and true truth. That's all you've got to do. Your own life is your own life. And there are several who I've talked to in our community, that is kind of the visceral reaction that we go to say, well, this whole God thing, it doesn't have much to do with my own little life. But option three is not what our story tells us. From the beginning, the promise to Abraham was this, I will bless you. Yes, you are in on this whole blessing thing. You matter. Your experience matters. But you can't go very far down this spiritual journey if you think that blessing is only going to be about what you accrue. You can't go very far on the spiritual journey if you think that blessing is only going to be about what you accrue. Because what will happen is you will keep missing the point, and you miss the point long enough and you will miss the boat. This thing only works when we see it in its comprehensive nature. When we see how connected everything is, when we realize that individual fulfillment happens in context. Individual fulfillment happens when we step back from Western individualism. We step back from me and my and mine and getting my fair share. When we step back from that two-ness perspective about the world and we step into the oneness perspective, we begin to realize that we're stepping into this Abrahamic connectedness. All the people of the earth, all the nations of the earth. When that happens, we step into a servant leadership role upon the planet. It is to us to serve the well-being of the whole. Last week, I gave you a quote from Brian McLaren. I couldn't find the book that I read it in, but this week, I got another quote, and I did find the book. The book is called Finding Our Way Again. Listen to this quote. We could also say it like this. Jesus called disciples so that he could send them out as apostles. A disciple is someone who learns. An apostle is someone who cares for the others. They were called together to learn so that they could be sent out to teach and serve. When a master musician invites promising young musicians to be her students, her ultimate goal is for them not to be students only, but also to become master musicians with students of their own. So the way, the tradition of music goes on, generation after generation, with continuity and creativity, preserving the past, but never being restricted to replaying it. Jesus calls disciples for the purpose of forming them into apostles, which he will send out to form disciples and apostles and so on across all social boundaries and generations so that the good news revolution he launched in his little corner of the world will spread to all of creation. The point of finding our own individual blessing and the point of finding our own individual fulfillment is so that within that context, we become part of a connected chain, part of a connected reality, all of which is working toward the well-being of the whole. And when we think, as Western consumerism has taught us to think, that fulfillment is about taking care of this little part, we can't go very far along the journey of fulfillment, because fulfillment is found in being part of the system as the system exists. Fulfillment is found in being part of the reality as reality exists. Now, here's the problem. I imagine you're sitting there. I'm putting myself into your mind thinking, oh, my Lord, I'm exhausted. And you're talking about me caring for the whole world. And I'm already worn out as it is. And I'm telling you, the reason you're worn out is because this isn't how we have started the process. Our starting point was, I've got to take care of me and mine. And that is exhausting. If you are only an individual, then you have to distinguish yourself as an individual. And a life spent distinguishing yourself as an individual is an exhausting life. A religion spent distinguishing yourself before God, and a network of relationships spent distinguishing yourself in your society is an exhausting life. Because we spend our time from grade school all the way through all of our preparation to where we finally now are distinguished by some criteria. And having distinguished ourselves, now we stand up and say, phew, I made it. I am now worth something, and now I can die. And all those years and all those moments and all those times that we were spending living our lives according to missing the point were hours and years spent not being able to savor and live the life of fulfillment and joy for which we were created. Now, when we walk this spiritual journey, we are capacitated to do this thing. You notice that this is the third leg in this journey to oneness. The first leg was follow the virtue curriculum, because the virtue curriculum actually mimics what it's going to be like later. Because what's going to be like later is you're going to find the divine heart, you're going to find the divine mind, and when you find the divine heart and mind, it's going to be about serving others. Well, let's go back and let's just train you to just follow the rules. And the rules are basically mimicking that. This is the care and the concern for others, for the well-being of others. But then the second part of the journey comes along, and we begin to realize that that ego-separated reality that we immersed ourselves in, defined ourselves by, that's not sufficient. We go into the second journey, and we realize our connectedness one to another, and we realize the oneness reality, and we begin to see what we didn't see. And as Jesus articulated it, when you love your neighbor as you love yourself, you're working in the dynamic as the dynamic is, because in a real way, you and your neighbor are a oneness, not a two-ness. When you love your enemy, you're a oneness, you're not a two-ness. And so we see that. Well, it becomes easier when we see it, having gone through this deconstruction stage, to walk into this pathway where we can take on the destiny given us by Abraham. Because Abraham's experience suggests that when you get there, you're going to find that your destiny mirrors his, and that is the destiny of serving the well-being of the whole, of all. Service to the whole just makes sense. Of course it does, once we see that everything is connected. We are part of the whole. This is the hallmark of this journey to oneness. This is the point. This is why we do the four categories of spiritual practice. By the way, if you're a newcomer, you haven't heard about that, Michelle's going to talk about it today at the Newcomer Pizza. This is the point of our religious energies. This is the point of our spiritual growth. This is the point of meditation. This is the point of the Enneagram. This is the point of reading our scriptures. This is the point of the self-awareness and self-disclosure. This is the point of learning conflict resolution. All the things that we talk about, the hallmark of these things, this journey to oneness, is that we move to the place where we recognize the oneness of all, and then we become servants of the divine agenda for the well-being of all. Now, our Western individualism and our love affair with it doesn't serve us very well here, because it makes us very susceptible to missing the point. Susceptible to living the religion of Abraham, but missing the point that Abraham got. Susceptible to living the religion and naming it the religion of Jesus, but missing the point of Jesus. We become susceptible to a religion of the part instead of the whole. It's about me, not about us. It's about getting, it's not about giving. It's about excluding, not including. And again, that is just exhausting. It's an exhausting religion that has to distinguish one's self for God. Because when we live this exhausted individualistic life and we follow this exhausting individualistic religion, there is very precious little time or energy left over to serve the mission. And there goes our fulfillment. And there goes our blessing. Because we get so focused on making our mark, so focused on making our lives count, that we missed the simple rhythm, the easy, joyful rhythm of living the mission life. It's a slow rhythm. It's a healthy rhythm. We get up each day and we do what we are able to do. We get up each day and we give the gifts that we have to give. And we husband the well-being of the whole. We get up each day and we make what is wrong right in our little corner of the world. And we realize that I am not out today to focus my life's structure and my energies and my whole intent on me and my and mine, but on the well-being of it all. And when we have our Western blinders on, and when we only see the importance of the individual, the part, it makes it painfully easy for us to miss the point of our religious life. And when that happens, we get saddled with silliness that masquerades as religion. Religion is as deep and intimate a part of our lives as sexuality is. In the fall, I'm going to do a series of Wednesday nights on sexuality, because these are two places we do not want to miss the point. You want to get these two areas of life right. Now, next week, we're going to have a guest speaker come talk to us about how this works out in practical everyday life. He was a minister in a church for some time, and he got just a snootful of the silliness that masquerades as religion. And so he ended up leaving the church, and he ended up starting a nonprofit. That nonprofit is called Help One Now. And I would encourage you to go online and read up about Help One Now this week and come prepared to ask this guy questions next week. Spirit of God, may we not miss the point of our religion. May we find the joy and the blessing that comes to individuals who are networked into the whole earth and connected to the whole of all the peoples of all the nations. And in that, may we find the fulfillment that is given to us. That it isn't about getting, it is about giving. It isn't about the part. It is about serving the whole. May this be an experiential part of our religious reality. Be that so, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.